Welcome to the Tales of an African Princess in America podcast. My name is Uzi. I created this podcast to talk about amazing Africans who are doing wonderful things all around the globe. These are everyday people like you and I who are making a difference in the fields of business, science, and the arts. I really hope that they inspire you as they have inspired me. So sit back and enjoy every single episode because it's made with lots of love. Hi guys, so today's episode is a really interesting one. I've been looking forward to this episode for a really long time. That is because I have such an amazing guest today. Her name is Jane Egerton Idehe, and she is the country manager Nigeria and regional sales manager West Africa at Avanti Communications Group. She has over 15 years of work experience in the telecommunications industry, and her experience spans over numerous countries including Nigeria, Ghana, and Liberia. She's so many things. She's a wife, she's a mother, and most recently also an author of an amazing book called Be Fearless, and that is currently a bestseller in 7 categories right now on Amazon. Welcome, Jane.
Thanks, Ozzy. Thanks a lot. I have been looking forward to it also. So it's not just you. Same here.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, where did you grow up?
So I started from very humble beginnings. Like I always say, I spent the first 27 years of my life living in one of the lowest slums of Lagos, Nigeria. So I grew up in the part of town called Ajegunle. It's like a slum.
Okay.
So of course I went to primary school there, but secondary school I went in the east. I went to a boarding school called Federal Government Girls College, Owerri. Then from there, I went to University of Nigeria and Soka, UNN, where I studied engineering, and I started my career journey after that.
Not a lot of people know actually what it means to grow up in a slum. You know, we watch it on TV, we probably have read about it, but what was it like actually growing up in the slum, and how did that shape the woman that you are today?
I think one of the things I tell people is that one of the fascinating thing about the slum is like you're just having a group of people that sometimes I feel like life is hopeless because of their situation. You know how it is. Your neighbor is a cleaner and your uncle is the guard or a security man. And the other person is a cook and some, you know, they're all doing all these menial jobs, working in the factory. So somehow they just, most of them will feel like life has dealt them a bad hand and sometimes make some very bad decisions. And if you're in that kind of environment, it's difficult to aspire, you know, because like everything around you is literally screaming the opposite, you know. Thinking about going to school, it could be a crazy idea when you have your neighbor that is probably just, you know, the girl is not, dropped out of school and she decided to trade or to, but she gets pregnant and, you know, aborts the baby, you know, all kinds of crazy things. Or someone has gone and robbed other people in the city and they fought. And he comes back home and they're tending to his wounds. So you have this kind of lawlessness that literally, you know, you could just wake up and you're walking on the street and somebody's been burned because he's stolen the night before. And there's a craziness that comes with living in that part of town. But of course, there's sincerely people that want to get out of that situation. And, you know, for them, it's going to be more like a tough one because everything around you, people around you are telling you, know, this is how life is. It can't get any better. Don't ask for more. And you are saying, maybe there's another way out. Now, maybe we should go to school. Maybe there's nothing wrong with getting education and getting a proper job. And so it's tough. You know, I'm looking for the best way to explain, but it's tough if someone doesn't have the basic, like a meal. It's like the Maslow law. You can't even desire more things. If you can't even feed yourself, then there's no need. You don't see any need to desire any other extras. So that's what you're up against, basically.
And you went to Federal Government College, right? Federal Government College is like a melting pot. You have people from, you know, not too fortunate in upbringing and backgrounds, but you have people who are actually coming with basically a silver spoon, or so to speak. How was it like in school? Were you bullied? Did you feel like you fit in school with all these other people who seem to have it all?
So I think first thing first, I was very happy to be in boarding school. I was coming from a home where I was, you know, I was barely getting by on one meal per day. Then I come to this boarding school and they're feeding me 3 times a day. So literally for the first 3 years, I had no clue what I was doing. I was just happy to be there. Like I'd be fed 3 times a day for nothing. So probably I was carried away, slightly a bit into intimidated because, you know, you had all the people from the middle class, you know, parents are educated. You guys have a driver. Did you say you have a glass door in your house? You know, some of these things are weird. You sleep a room in a, you know, you sleep alone in a room. You have a room to yourself. You know, those kind of things were like literally. So it's, it could be kind of intimidating. I think in a way I got lost in the beginning because, you know, you just happy to be there and you just go with the flow. I had self-esteem issues as well because probably I also was bedwetting, so that didn't help. You know, intimidated with all those people around you. But one of the things I would say was the good, you know, being in that environment, that they gave me aspiration. You know, hearing those stories, I wanted to be like them. Sometimes your biggest challenge is that you don't even know what to aspire to. Nobody is exposed. You don't know anything better. The fact that, okay, I have an uncle, at least she's a teacher. I think I can be a teacher. Or I have an aunt, she cleans for some expatriate family. Yeah, maybe I could clean and the expatriate family will take care of me. You know, that's the best you could see. Then to come to an environment where people, you see people that their fathers are doctors and lawyers and, you know, that it teaches you because you're so intrigued. First of all, you're first of all intimidated. And of course, you get intrigued. You want to know more. So tell me, what does it mean to be a doctor? What does your dad do? You know, those stories kind of inspire me.
That's amazing. That is really amazing to have come from humble beginnings and become, you know, get to the top of your career. Of course, we're going to come to that. What was the job market like for you? Like the job hunt, like when you graduated, I'm guessing you probably served, you know, you did the National Youth Service Program. How long did it take you to get a job, any job?
To get the first job took me about 3 months, but it felt like 10 years because of all the pressure. So this is me. I knew I didn't know anyone, literally didn't know anyone. Just, you're just banking that God, please help me here. Then I go job hunting every day. I'm walking around the streets of Lagos, dropping my CVs. I learned to be nice to people, like to the security guards and the receptionist, because I didn't know anyone. And, you know, you learn to throw away, you know, throw you some, you know, some standard terms. You know, you go to the gate, you're like, oh, I'm looking for the admin officer. No, we don't have an admin officer. Oh, I'm looking for, no, there's no HR officer. Oh, I'm looking for the operation. You just throw these words around, hoping that one of them would click. It was tough. You know, I remember one day, in hindsight, and I knew that it was heat wave. I almost fainted at the place we called Babbage or Sandfield because I walked around via, probably dehydrated and really hadn't eaten. And then there came this whole heat wave, and I almost fell and fainted on the floor. And I remember after that experience, I probably didn't even leave my house for another 2 weeks. I was so scared. I wasn't too sure what was happening to me. But it was depressing because every day, this is me. Graduated, I studied engineering. I have to ask my parents for transport fare. I'm going to look for a job, you know. And they're like, why would we give you the transport fare? We've already, you know, trained. We've got to feed. If we give it to you, you know, we have to trade something. So it was a very tough period. I was literally under pressure because I knew, you know, I had invested a lot, given it my best shot to go to college and get a degree. Even when everybody around you say, I don't know if this is a good idea, you could have done something easier. So right, I wanted to make sure that that dream literally getting into the workforce happened. So, yeah. But I'm happy it did. I'm happy it did. I talk about an interesting story in this job. You wouldn't believe it. So I kept going to this particular company because a friend of mine had told me that they pay well and it was an engineering firm. And of course, I wanted to literally grow my career in my field. So I kept going and, you know, they would turn you around when you throw all those words. After a while, they just know you. So I know one of the lady told me, you know what, I'm going to advise you to go home today, but I promise you when you come Monday, just walk up to me and tell me I'm looking for Mr. Larry this. Don't ask me any question. I will call him for you. Once he comes, tell him what you want, but please don't tell him that I told you.
Okay.
And that's how. I went there on Monday. I said, I'm looking for Mr. Larry. They called Mr. Larry. He came. He said, oh, do I know you? Do we have any? You know, he spent like an hour trying to figure out how I got to know him. I'm trying to convince him that I'm a good candidate to employ. So that's how I got my first big break.
That's amazing because I was just about to ask you about your big break, but it's amazing that you're talking about it now. One thing that you talked about actually stood out to me. You said that you didn't know anyone when you were looking for a job. And when I've spoken to a lot of successful people, I've heard some people throw out the word, you know, I've heard some people say that they're self-made, right? I've heard a lot of people say that. But let me know, like, do you consider yourself self-made in that you know, you were out there trying to find a way, you didn't really know anyone. How do you feel about that? Is that one of the ways that you describe yourself?
My dad used to say that, actually, but I normally say that I had angels along the way, because I feel like I couldn't have done it without those people, even though I didn't know them at that time. You know, like, there were people that were just kind to me. Kind, like Larry, that was kind to me, the receptionist. So I can't say I did it on my own, because if that receptionist, that they didn't tell me do this, and if Larry did not give me that chance, I would have probably been still walking around and trying to figure it out. So I normally say that I had help along the way. I had angels help me, and that the human beings can be kind. There are really people out there that are kind. They want to give back and they want to help others.
Now you work in a big organization. You're at the top of your field. You know, you're doing really, really well. But I also know that it's a male-dominated industry, right? Or even a male-dominated position. Did you ever feel the imposter syndrome where you're like, I don't belong here? You know, you think about where you've been and where you're coming from. Did you ever feel that imposter syndrome, and how did you deal with that?
Okay, I'll give you an example of one big one that just happened of late. You know, Ozzy, I'm feeling like you read my book. Questions you're asking me are right on point. I'm like, okay, did she read the book? I didn't give her the book. How did she? Are you kidding me? That's like a daily thing. You have to manage. I'll give you the very recent one of that. I went to Yale for a training. It's called Women on Board.
Okay.
So, and I went to that training the first day, the second day. I'm at the third. I'm like, girl, you have not said anything in class. You just go through the responses in your head. Mm-hmm. You recite it like a million times. You struggle to raise up your hand. And I remember talking to my coach. I think that was about the third day. I was telling her that, you know, this isn't funny anymore. That I just can't seem to raise up my hand. I just feel intimidated. I'm in a room with 30 women from all over the world. We are literally two Africans. And actually, it was my mom that made me aware. Maybe that's what hit me. She asked me, oh, so how many Nigerians? I'm like, no, there's no Nigerian. Oh, how many of you are, like, where are your colleagues? I'm like, no, they're just two Africans there. Like, wow, that is interesting. So then I'm talking to my coach and I'm like, I'm struggling. Like, literally, this is not me. And I think one of the issues you have with imposter syndrome is when you're in a place, you feel you're not as represented.
Right.
And you struggle with aspects of you think is not probably acceptable. I think one of the challenges I was having was the accent. And you wonder if your accent is right. You know, am I saying it the right way? Is the accent too heavy? Do people understand me? Should I speak slower? And am I using my hand? You know, all these kind of things are going through your head instead of just saying what you want to say.
Right.
So, you know, I spoke to my coach and she was asking me, so why do you feel that way? And I told her, you know, all the things I was using to judge myself, the fact that we were only two Africans, and I thought my accent, and she's like, maybe it's okay, you know, accept you're judging yourself, then speak to yourself. So I literally used to go to the bathroom and speak to myself and say, it's okay to feel like you have an accent in a room of women and you're worried if they understand you. But you do have a message. You are a woman in tech, and there are very few of them, and they want to hear what it is to do business in Africa. They want to understand your perception or your experience doing that. And I will literally psych myself up and go back and raise my hand. Now talk. So I think it's always there when you feel underrepresented. You know, I've been in very, very lots of places. I had to go through this. And most times I try positive reinforcement. I try to talk to myself. Sometimes I just try to accept that literally I am feeling scared and uncomfortable, but I still want to talk. And lots of times I try to, probably first of all, warm up to people and try and create a friendly environment. I think when people, you're comfortable with people or you know them informally, it's easier when you're in their presence to then project yourself. But girl, I don't think it goes away. I think you just have to deal with it. It always appears when you're in a place you feel like you have the least representation.
That's absolutely true. And it's amazing that even that it's an ongoing thing. You know, it's not something that you've done. It's something that still comes up even now. And I did look up your Yale, because, you know, I'm in research. So I can go off on a tangent. I can pick up one thing and just like go dig. And I was like, wow, that's a great achievement. Like, not a lot of people go and do that, even here in the United States. So that's a big, big deal. I also read somewhere that you were also recognized as one of the 50 leading ladies in corporate Nigeria. I think that's another amazing thing.
Thank you so much.
But in all of these things, right, in all of these things, what would you say is your greatest achievement?
Number one priority would be my family. Like I sat like, yesterday, I had gone for two radio shows because I'm promoting my book.
Okay.
And at the end of the radio shows, I show up at home. I was just happy to sit in bed with my kids. My daughter wanted me to talk all about the radio show and, you know, did I do this? Did I do that? And my husband wanted to know how it was. What was my itinerary? I was just happy. That was just my happy place to have my loved ones that are really interested in what I do. And I think for me, that's the biggest achievement. Like, I know my son was like, oh, can I come into the show? Can I do a guest appearance? I'm like, no, I haven't asked her yet. But I just want to, you know, you want to know that, you know, the people around you buy into your vision and they love you and they want to support that. And I think for me, that's one of the biggest achievements I think I can even ask for. Like, I couldn't ask for more. I just wanted to know that. And they keep you grounded. You know, this morning, I thought it was interesting that I literally have a head. You know, you're talking about hair day the other day.
So right.
Was my daughter's wash day. So you know what it is. I don't need to.
I know what it is.
Literally for 2 hours, we are conditioning, washing, and oil treatment, detangling. You know, like all that. But I was happy to do that. I was happy that literally she thinks that is amazing that her mom, you know, is interested to do her hair. And for me, that's a beautiful experience. I couldn't have asked for more. I wouldn't want to go ahead impacting the world, and I can't impact my kids.
I can tell that you're really hands-on, and you know, I read a bit of your articles on your website. There's one about owning the room, bringing your A game, actually, and then there's another one from your experience when you went to Japan. And I could just tell, like, you talk a lot about, you know, lessons that you learn just by hanging around your kids. And that I could just tell that you are like a family person. And, you know, that's amazing. You know, when we think about people, you know, up there where you are right now, we think about women who delegate a lot, like, you know, outsource most of these things. So I say you're, you know, like you're saying, doing your daughter's hair right now. There are a lot of women who don't have time for that. They'll take your daughter somewhere, have someone else do it, or they will, you know, have outsourced all these other things that they can do. And so it's heartwarming to see that there's a woman who is doing it all and still, you know, having an amazing family. That's amazing. My next question, I'm going to ask you about your marriage. Now, I've watched a lot of successful women, right? A lot of women who are really successful, they're either married or they're single. So it seems like something about success calls for a family situation that is supportive. Or if you're not going to have that support, then being single, being by yourself, you know, away from all the chaos. So what kind of person supports his wife to become this amazing? Do you have the support of your husband? Is he in the limelight like you are? Did he have, you know, what is it about him that actually keeps you going? Because there are a lot of women who want to do this, but they don't have that support from family. So to the girl who is out there listening right now and who wants a career like yours, but also wants a family, what are some of the things that she should look out for, you know, in a partner that could also help her along the way?
Do you know that about 1 in every 3 people in the United States listen to at least one podcast every month? That's millions of people listening. And do you also know that every month, thousands of podcast listeners listen to the Tales of an African Princess in America podcast? Well, do you have a business, service, or event that you would love others to hear about? Then look no further. To promote your services on the podcast, send an email to talesbydrozy@gmail.com today. Or you can visit our website at www.talesofanafricanprincessinamerica.com.
Welcome back to the Tales of an African Princess in America podcast. So the girl who is out there listening right now and who wants a career like yours, but also wants a family, what are some of the things that she should look out for, you know, in a partner that could also help her along the way?
A chapter in my book was written by my husband.
Wow.
He literally wrote a chapter in my book. Let me say partnership. So if you do have a partner that doesn't support your vision or your dream, you will struggle a lot. You know, maybe that's why you're saying that probably people would rather be single, because you can't be in a partnership and try to achieve it alone. Because you always have a clash if you're not aligned. I will give you an example. I was in Accra on Thursday, Friday. I'd gone to do some work and also launched the Be Fearless campaign in Accra. But for those 2 days, someone has to watch the home front, isn't it? If you don't have a husband that is willing to chip in and say, okay, you know, you're going to be there 2 days. Okay, I'll take Sarah for ballet. I'll make sure that Asha does his homework. You know, I'll try and bridge that gap. It's going to be impossible. Something would have to give. For me, I think one of my biggest strengths is my husband. And I say that because I always tease him. I'm like, you know what? I think I married a French guy. You're not Nigerian, you know. He's always made choices that seem very non-traditional. Mm. And sometimes people like think they're weird, you know, like you let your wife go and do a job in another country. And you know, like, why did you do that? You know, you have to do that and all that. And that's not the first. There are lots I can go through several examples where he has really showed up for me. Like he's one of my biggest fans, literally rooting for me. And what I tell young girls or to the younger me, I'll say, probably try and bring it up when you're dating. Even though you don't know if it's going to happen, you know, there's no guarantees. But do talk about it with the person you're dating. Because most cases, you see the men talk about it. The guy will tell you, oh, these are the plans I have for my family. This is where I see myself in 5 years. This is what I'm, you know, this is what I would like to achieve. They talk about it and they confidently own it. You should have that chat about the future. Let them know where you're headed. Let them know what you want to do. Most young women shy away from that. You know, they keep it to themselves, and all of a sudden you get married and you're telling him that, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. You see most cases, they'll be shocked, like, no, I think you shouldn't do that. So I say it's a discussion you should have while you're dating. It's good, you know, people really understand what's driving you. What are you trying to achieve? One of the things that probably that worked for me is that maybe because when I married, I didn't marry so young. You know, as a young girl, I probably wasn't like the first relationship I had. I couldn't really voice it that much. I couldn't really accept what I wanted to do. But by the time I met my husband, I was 30. So, and I'd already gone through a period of mentoring where I was a bit more accepting, you know, to really talk about where I wanted to head to. You know, I already had my personal mission statement. I set my goals. I had my vision and I was comfortable talking about it. And, you know, that helps in a relationship because if the guy can accept you for who you are, then, you know, nobody knows how the journey is going to turn out. Who knows if you're not going to do much more than what you set out.
So I'm going to go ahead and ask you about your book. You know, you've written a book right now, and the title of this book is Be Fearless. Walk me through why you chose that title. Is it reflective of who you are? Like, do you feel like there's a time when you were ever fearful? Why did you choose that title?
Funny enough, the first title I wanted to give the book was, you know, a letter to my daughter, because that's the inspiration for the book. Oh, I wanted to leave a legacy for my daughter, and I wanted to write something I could leave and she could read and it could help her on her journey. So she became the muse for the book. So even while I was writing the book, you know, you sometimes you just get to this point, you kind of blank out. And when I get to those points, I just ask myself, what are you trying to say to Sarah? So Sarah's in there. If Sarah was sitting there, what are you actually, what do you want to tell her? That brings clarity, then I go ahead. So, but of course, later on we changed it. So I did call it Be Fearless because I feel lots of the experiences I share in the book, it's not because Jane is a superhuman being and she's super smart and she's all put together. It's because I did those things scared, really, really scared. I did those things waking up, telling myself, this thing might blow out in the morning. Like literally, when people hear what I've done, they'll be like, this girl is crazy. But I want to do it anyway. I rather do it than not do it. And there are lots of instances, even getting married to my husband, I knew it was a time of tremendous challenge. Most of my friends were like, you're making the wrong decision. You just met this guy 6 months ago. Why are you marrying this guy? You know?
Yeah.
And you know, you take on those acts, and I call them acts of courage or bravery, because you do them even scared. But that's what it takes to be fearless. And that's what I tell people. People think being fearless is when you're all confident and assertive and like, yeah, I'm all pumped up, I'm gonna do this. Being fearless is having clarity of purpose to say, this is what I want to do, but it's scary. And literally the environment doesn't look conducive. Or I don't think I have all the support I need. Or it looks like a very risky venture. But I'm convinced that this is my direction and I still want to do it. But you do it anyway. And most times you see that for leadership is people that can stand in front of the crowd. You don't go with the crowd. Sometimes you have to stand out of the crowd because sometimes you do things that are not very conventional. So that's why I encourage young girls. You know, I know in a study in engineering, you know the funny thing? My jam form.
Yeah.
2 weeks to the submitting the form, I took an eraser because I'd come back from this boarding school, like you said, I was all pumped. Because after being exposed to all these amazing kids from all over Nigeria, I just told myself, I want to be like them. I want to be like their parents. I want to go to school and study something I know I would love and have a passion for. Then I come home to my environment and everybody's like, girl, they're getting this hyped too much. Please play it safe. you're going to look for school fees, you better go for something we show you're going to get admission. And we want you to go to something you just come out quickly. So after all this kind of negative remarks, and people tried all kinds of ways. Some will be like, do you think you're so smart? You know people that do engineering. Do you want to just go and hang out with these guys? Those guys, you can't even make it. You know, 2 weeks to submitting that form, I erased it. And I didn't know what to switch it with because all in my head, all I wanted to do was study engineering. So I flipped through the form looking for anything that is physics, chemistry, maths that qualifies it as a degree. And that's how I landed. And I saw industrial chemistry. I didn't even know what it was. I just knew it was 4 years and probably would be easier to get in. Playing it safe. They said we should play it safe. Once the admissions were out, I went to school to check. Girl, my name was on top of the list. And if I had actually chosen engineering, I still would have fallen among the first 10 on the list.
Oh, wow.
Why? Why was I listening to everybody around me?
Wow. So you still went ahead to study engineering, even though you put in something
because
else?
I tell people that there are no mistakes in life. That is one of the biggest lessons I learned in life, to protect your dream. I spent the first year, I literally used to go to the head of electronics engineering every other month. And he will ask me the same question. Why do you want to study engineering? And I will try to sell it to him. Sell the idea. I know I made a mistake, but this is what I really wanted to study. It's been the passion all the while. And I was fortunate at the end, I got into engineering by my second year. They switched me into engineering. I was so, so highly motivated. I was willing to start from year one. After doing 1 year in industrial, but I was willing to do another 5 years from scratch.
Wow.
But I was fortunate enough, they moved me into second year. But I think I needed that process because that was one of the earliest lessons I learned in life. So now, even as I left and I went to the workforce, I knew that I would take on projects. I would do things that would not literally not be conventional, or people around me would think that this is way too up. Like you're living in a dream world. But I was willing to take that risk. Rather, I'll be the one to feel and tell myself, okay, I didn't do it or I didn't make it. But I didn't want people to be the one telling me this is too, this is too risky. Go for something that is not risky.
Great example to give. I know that you say your book is for girls mostly, but I think like boys can actually benefit from all these principles well. Because your son can take away so much,
Good thing, like you said, because two of those chapters are actually dedicated to men. So there's a chapter that is called Tea with Men. And of course, there's a chapter written by my husband. But I think what I realized, the book could actually be cut across all genders. So you're actually right.
I know you do a lot of things for women. Like I also, found out that you founded an online platform called Women Career. What is the passion behind doing things specifically for women?
There's a history to it. So I don't know when it all started. So I can't like say, this is the aha moment. I said, I'm going to do this. I know when I was in school in engineering, one of the things I do was volunteer for IEEE, Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineering. So it's actually a US-based, but it's an international institute of engineers. So they have different chapters in different countries. So for the Nigerian chapter, we co-founded the Women Arm, so the Women Engineering Arm. I was always in a place where women were least represented. So I was studying engineering in a class of 100 boys, and there were only 10 girls. So 10% of that class were women. So, you kind of feel like, maybe we could do more. Maybe we could encourage more girls. And that's what we were doing as that group was encouraging more girls to just demystify, to say, that's not true. Engineering is not all about your physical strength. It's not about gender. It's about solving problems. And what we're looking for is, your brains. That's what we want you to use.
Right.
Do you have an interest in solving problems? And solving problems using science, then that's what engineering is all about. And I really wanted to go and push that message out there, especially to young women. Because when I was younger, people told me the opposite. Don't study this thing, it's for men. And I was trying to say, that's not right. The stereotype is all wrong. I also feel like along my career journey, initially lots of women, then as I climb the ladder, the women start to thin out. You start to, you barely notice them. As I speak in my office, I'm the only woman, so you can imagine.
Oh, wow.
So, you tend to ask yourself, so what happened to all the women? We were lots of us when we started. And now, at the top, I can barely count how many I can see. And that probably was informed the decision to start Women and Careers. Like, how do we stop that leakage? How do we get more women to stay in that career? They want to do it. Why are we creating an environment where they find it hostile to continue growing your career there?
You're talking about, being 30 when you got married. And I'm looking at your Instagram pictures right now, and I'm like, how old is this lady? She looks really, really young. And that's a rhetorical question. I'm not even going to let you answer that. But you look really good.
Thank you so much.
That's good. Okay, let me ask you about mentorship. If you have mentors even now, because what is the importance of having mentors? I know you probably mentor a whole lot of people, but do you have mentors even at your level now?
I do mentor lots of people, you're right. But I do have mentors because I don't think, why do you want to learn from your mistakes? Why don't you learn from other people's experiences? Maybe because I've, you know, I talk about my beginnings. There's no way I could have been here without mentors. I didn't even know what I wanted at the point. I didn't know what was available. I didn't know what existed. I didn't know what was possible. So that's what mentors bring to the table for you. They could have point you in the right direction. And sometimes they give you the skills and the tools to help you. I wrote about this article as well. We'll talk about the value of mentorship. Most times we don't know what to do, especially in situations that are new or in environments that are new or where you have options of decision-making where you don't have hindsight or experience to decide what the best options are. That's where a mentor comes. Because most of these mentors that probably have gone through that journey. They have experience and you can tap into that experience. It's for your own good.
Right.
Why do you want to make mistakes if people already made the mistakes before you?
Those are strong words, actually. I couldn't put it any better. Mentors are invaluable. I think they're really needed. And you put it in such an amazing way. If you could do it all over, right? If you could go back and change something, your decisions that you've taken along the way. I know a lot of people who, you know, went through hardship, you know, growing up and, you know, finding their own way. They always say that they don't want their kids to go through that. Right. But are there any positives from your childhood that you wish that your kids would have those values? So if you could go back and change how things have kind of turned out, you know, is there anything that you would change? Would you wish that you came up with a silver spoon or what is it that you would that you could change about the whole experience?
So when I was young, I used to wish that, you know, when you're literally hungry, you're in boarding school, nobody's visiting you, you don't have provisions. I used to just literally wish this was different. Like I had parents that actually could afford or were well-to-do. But in hindsight from now, I don't. I think part of my drive, my motivation was my experience. Like I talk about what happened with the engineering and industrial chemistry. That was a huge lesson. And it stopped me from making more mistakes in the future. So I wouldn't take it back for anything. When it comes to my kids, I know one of the biggest challenges I've had of recent is the fact that I literally had to go and study how do I motivate my kids. I literally was buying books, you know. I was buying Grit and The Act of Perseverance by Angela. I was just looking for books because I found out what worked for me can't work for my kids. At their age, I was being driven by the fact that I didn't want to live in that kind of environment. I didn't want to be living in poverty where I couldn't even afford to be, you know, to eat. I wanted a better life and I was willing to work hard to get out of that situation. But my kids don't have that kind of situation. They don't worry about what to eat or what to wear, or they don't have TV. I'm looking for a way to motivate them. How do you motivate someone that already has the basics? You have to go deep and look and see what is it in their core that literally can be used as a way to get them to look and want things that are better for the future or things that can allow them impact the environment. Definitely for myself, I don't, but for my kids, it's something I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to figure that out. How do I motivate them? How do I get them to a point where they want to do things for themselves? Not because mom said or dad said, but because they believe that this is good for the environment. This is good for the future. You don't want to be sitting next to your son every day trying to give him a reason to do his homework. Homework for himself. Because he wants to make sure he does the work, puts in the effort, he gets rewarded. Or he wants to see that he improves himself. He's self, you know, just like you are driven yourself and motivated yourself. You want to, you know, you want to have that for them as well.
Okay, those are really good. Those are really, really good. Even though they don't have similar experiences, I feel like they'll be okay. You know, they will have their own challenges. Every environment presents its own challenges and they'll grow from it, you know. So it's heartwarming that you're trying to motivate them and all that. And I can see that. I can read that. Even when I read your articles, I can tell that you're giving them the best. You're freeing from an early age. You're push them in the right direction. And I think they'll turn out okay. I think you're a great mom.
Oh, thank you. You're literally being like a good sister, a support system, and encouraging me right now.
Well, I have a lot of sisters. So I think that actually plays a role because I have five sisters. They're all older than I am.
Oh, amazing.
It's kids. So when I see people do amazing things for the kids, I can tell the kind of parents that they are. And I pick that up really early just by reading and looking at your profile online. So what are the next steps for you? I know you're at the peak of your career. You've written a book now, which is going to be out March 17th on Amazon. It's called Be Fearless. By Jane Egerton Idehe. Yeah. So you guys check it out. You're an amazing speaker. I can tell that's going to be an amazing book too. But you're at the peak of your career right now. Yeah. What are the next steps? Do you have more goals that you want to achieve? What's the next step for someone in your place right now? I was in a meeting last week and one of the ladies there was just saying how, you know, she's looking for professional development, but she feels like she's at the peak, she's hit the ceiling of her career. And I was sitting there thinking, wow, that's actually possible. Like people actually hit the ceiling where they just don't know what to do next, you know? That's amazing, you know? And so what is it for you? What is it like for you? Like, do you feel like, okay, on to other projects? You've written this is your first book, right?
Yes, this is my first book. But like you said, you know, some of the things, that's why sometimes you take a time out, you know, you renew yourself, you expose yourself. And you could tell from the trend of things probably where I'm headed next, because I went to Yale to do the board training. And there's been a lot of, you know, focus on that, because I've gotten to the point, I believe, I want to take my experience and my expertise and my skill set and take it to organizations. Okay. Where you want to bring that functional skill, you want to bring that uniqueness of being an African woman in tech, having a good understanding of the market space, to multinationals that need it, to companies and corporations that need it on their board, because sometimes that is not there. So you tend to see that there's a gap, and I would want to, you know, go to organizations that do have that gap and try to bridge that. So I still think there's so much for me to do, especially in the African continent, because for a while I was more narrowed into my tech space. I did a lot of things in the tech industry, and I'm learning that you could take that knowledge, you could take that experience and take it to people that need it. There are lots of startups that need exposure to tech, and you sitting on that board, you can actually help them. You can show them how to bridge that space. Like I say, what I'm very good at, I tell people, is to take the human iOS and the computer iOS, and you bridge it. So you talk human and you talk computer and you bridge it. And sometimes there's a huge gap, because we're either all too techy or we are heavy on the human side, or people are not learning to bridge it. You have a good understanding of your market space, of your consumers, of your customers, and ensure that, you know, when you bring in tech, you bring it at the right.
Okay, so where can our listeners find you? You know, your email, online, you know, give us, of course, there's that book on Amazon.
Exactly, so that's a good start. But I also have a website, janeegerton.com. So one word, janeegerton.com. You can find me everywhere on social media, at least the key ones. So the Facebook, Instagram, or NK_Amadi. So I'm all there. If you want to mail me, it's jane@janeegerton.com. I'm just closer to you than you think, you know. People get shocked when I respond to their Twitter messages or Instagram messages. They're literally shocked.
Because you're a busy person. What is a day in your life like when you're working? I know you're busy. Is it a standard 9-to-5 job? Or do you find that you take work home?
Well, I try not to, you know, because right now you head the team, so you try to delegate a lot, and you come in at point, you literally manage the team, and you come in at points where you think is required. Of course, if you have a crisis, you need to take the lead and you need to drive that, you need to drive the ship, you know, and make sure we all make it out of that crisis on time. But of course, that requires a lot of meetings, because you're also the country manager, your role is not just the functional in that sense. You're representing the brand. So there's lots of speaking engagement, lots of travel. So it can be quite busy. I know what could have happened if I didn't get the kind of people, like angels, like I call them, help me. They didn't know me out of anywhere. So when people send me those messages, I think there are lots of people that have helped. I don't even know. I literally don't know, because I probably met them on LinkedIn. They sent me their CV. Okay, this lady that hasn't really met me, and she's already helping me fix a job interview or something. Because I know it could have just been the younger Jane. It's just like someone gave me a helping hand. I didn't even know me. The first guy that gave me the job didn't know me.
All right. So final words. So if you could speak to a girl right now who is probably in the slums somewhere, you know, in any country actually, and she's dreaming of a better life and how to navigate the whole thing, what would you say to her about the future, about how to get there? You know, what would you say to her to help her get through the process and the time that she is
right now?
So if I was talking to that young girl, I would say to her that you are the reason I wrote the book. Because just like you, I wanted to give up so many times, and I talk about it in the book. But you know the funny thing with life, find the light in the tunnel and hang in there. It could just be the next second. It's so easy to be overwhelmed by the situation, your environment, and the fact that you haven't eaten, you cannot afford to even, you know, take care of yourself, you don't have anybody to mentor you. There's so many things that are telling you it's not possible. But what I would ask you, if you could just do me a favor and protect that dream, just keep it there. Tell yourself, if I can do it, I will do it. If I can do it, I will do it. And the resources will come. The people will come. Sometimes it just takes a day. It just takes a day meeting that Mr. Larry that will say to you, okay, I've heard all your speech. Okay, give me your CV. It just takes a day meeting someone that says to you, okay, I like what you say and I like what you do. Come, I think I have someone that would like to interview you. But I put that in the book so people know that you could have, I could have given up. I almost checked out of school in my fourth year. I packed my bags and told myself I was leaving. Yes, I did. I hadn't eaten for 3 days. I was invited and everybody was asking me for their money. I just told myself, what's the use? Let's just go home. But it just took somebody buying me dinner. That cheered me up. And, you know, you go to fellowship in the evening and you're like, okay, God can do it. And 2 days later, you're back to your normal self and you push it, you push it. And there we are today. If I had just left that day, that probably would have been a different story. So I know what it is to really hang in there when it looks like all the odds are stacked against you. But I keep acting, just hang in there. Hang in there.
Wow, those are the words.
My word to belittle Jane.
Those are amazing words. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing the process on the podcast. You know, it's good to know that there are women who are in Africa right now who are killing it, you know, and that you can make it in Nigeria, you can make it in wherever you are right now. Just protect your dream, hang in there. And thank you for sharing the process. A lot of times when you talk to people, they tell you God did it, but they don't really tell you how God did it, you know? So I'm very excited when I speak to women
how
who break it down and say, you know, this is how it worked. This is where my lows, this is my highs. And that's why I created the podcast, just to highlight people like you. And so I'm really thankful.
And I love the work you do. I love the work you do. I must tell you, Uzi, that I love the work you do. I listened to a couple of your podcasts actually before, you know, logging in. And I was like so impressed. So please send my love to your husband.
Of course I will.
As well. And yes. I was really blown by, I think there was one of the podcasts you did on the, I think you guys had a tornado or something. You had a tornado.
Oh, yeah, we did have a tornado a couple of days
ago. And I was so impressed. Yeah, you took some time out to literally talk about it. Because sometimes we just take it for granted because you see it on the news and you're like, oh, it's not me. There's some people out there. But these things happen because as we talk, this morning there was an explosion somewhere in Lagos. And and I know there will be millions of families that are worried that this night probably have nowhere to put their head. Yeah, there was some kind of gas explosion and lots of buildings were affected, even a boarding school. I think Corona was affected. And I know that today lots of parents will be grieving. Lots of families will be literally thinking and asking themselves, how are we going to get this out? When you've lost your property and all that. But it's good to know there are people like you that, you know, happen, but you know, we can all support each other and it will be fine. We'll go through this together. So thank you for the work you do.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you. Right now we're gonna go head out and actually go get some groceries because there's a Corona craziness going on and everybody's trying to get everything off the shelf.
There's no more tissue paper in the US.
So I'm going to go try to get some right now and just some food. You know, I work in a hospital, so I'm not freaking out as much. If you continue to wash your hands and do the meal and eat well, not just buying toilet paper, you know, eat good food, nutritious food.
Stay away from fast food.
Yes. And we'll get through this time, everyone. You know, it'll pass. Thank you so much. I appreciate this. Thank you. I think I gained more from you than anything.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. I would love to let you share with most of my, you know, fans and followers and loved ones because you're doing a good job. And I'd love to celebrate that.
Yeah. Thank you so much. All right. Well, I'm going to end it here. Have an amazing day.
Hopefully one of these days, maybe when I'm in Nigeria or Ghana or wherever it is.
Oh, please.
I can actually. Coffee. Yes, that would be awesome. All right. I hope your book sells out too. And that that's a great success as well.
Yeah. Thank you so much. But I would definitely keep in touch.
Sure. Thank you. And have an amazing day.
Same here. Thank you.
Hey listener, what do you think about this episode? Do you have a question or some feedback that you would like to provide or a suggestion for a future guest? Now you can send me a voice message. Voice messages are an easy way for you to send me audio messages that just might end up on a future episode of the podcast. You can send me a voice message right now just by clicking on the link in my show notes. Can't wait to hear from you.